Can't risk it. Blaze headed back up the bank. Let's stick to the forest edge. Dante disagreed, but found himself light on the guts to speak up. They broke back into the trill of birdsong and the rattle of wind-shaken leaves, and made a brisk trot south. Within seconds, Dante was shivering without stop. That wasn't how I imagined it would be, he said once his blood had calmed. You think about killing people a lot, Blaze said, smiling faintly. Sometimes. He smiled back. It didn't last. On his knees like that. Don't feel sorry for him. He was all set to trample us into the grass. But it was so savage, Dante said, and Blaze shrugged. It was worse than the other times. It felt like a regression, like an act of a man he didn't know. He had no illusions fights were supposed to be fair. If the one with the tracker had been even, he without his horse and them without surprise, he expected it would have ended with a few pounds of steel through his heart. Yet he couldn't shake the feeling that what they'd done had been unnatural, that somewhere the gods were watching them, and their judgment would be harsh. We'd be dead except that spell, Blaze said softly a moment later. Yeah. Were you scared? No, he said, running faster. A little. When I tripped. I just about dropped a pile on my britches, Blaze said, chortling so hard he had to sputter out the words. Then the look on his face when you blinded his horse. Gods! Dante chuckled weakly. It had looked otherworldly, the black ball where there should have been a head, the rider throwing his hands over his head like a man falling through the false door of a wildcat trap. You have a strange sense of humor. He'd have laughed too if he could see it. Blaze giggled. Dante joined him, feeling outside himself. Their nervous energy gave out after a mile or so, and they slowed to a stroll to catch their breath. Dante clasped his hands behind his head to ward off the stitch in his side. They're not going to miss our tracks after that, he said, gazing into the woods. Not even with their woodsman dead. I figured that's why we were running away, Blaze said. The nearest town could be 20 miles from here. They're on horseback. So what? So what? So they'll find us and kill us. Blaze rolled his eyes. So what do you want to do about it? I don't know, Dante said, startled at the pitch of his own voice. He thought he was angry with Blaze for being so cavalier, but after a quarter mile of silent seething, he'd reached the same conclusion as the boy. They couldn't hide. They had no horses. Returning to the woods would do no good when the temple men had already found them once. All they could do was run and hope. The trees thinned, and he saw a stream of smoke rising from a fraction of a mile down the bank. For a moment, he let himself think their luck had turned, that it would be the outskirts of a town, maybe even Wetton. But it was a single house on the river's edge. The land rolled empty beyond it. Wait, he said, that smoke.
What about it?
Blaze yawned. There'll be a boat.
Smoke means fire. At the house where they have the fire, you dunce. You don't live in a river and not have a boat.
Oh, Blaze said, sure. If we cross over, they'd have to waste time finding a ferry.
The current's fast, Dante said, frowning, picking at this new thread. If we row hard, they'd have to be riding pell-mell to keep up. We can reach town ahead of them.
They looked at each other.
Ambush,
Blaze said. Nater, Dante agreed. One of those words you repeat without a clue where it came from.
Yeah, the boy said, licking his lips. That's it. We take them out of the mix, and that gives us time to think up what the hell we do next. If we can't figure out what to do before they send the next guys, maybe we deserve to eat it.
Dante crouched in the bushes of the forest's fringe. Nothing but open grass north and south. Can you run?
Let's do this thing. They cut right down the shallow slope of the grassy band, and then the steep rocky banks until their boots touched the water. The house lay straight ahead. It was a small thing, clearly no more than a couple rooms, and as they got closer, Dante grew afraid they'd found the one fisherman in the wide world who didn't own a boat. They drew to a quick walk at a couple hundred yards off, ears sharp for footsteps, for shouts, any sign of its owners, other than the white wisps of smoke. At 100 yards he could smell it strongly, the sweet smoky scent of dry heat and crisp winter. His eyes locked to the hut as they fell into its shadow. The bank stretched out in a tiny spit right before the hut, and as they crested the moist earth, he heard the hollow slap of water on a hull.
"Nice deduction, Sage Prattus," Blaze muttered, regarding the rowboat moored in the miniature bay beneath the house.
A light wind blew in from the north. It smelled like the weather were turning.
"Think it's safe."
"Does it matter?"
Blaze said, tromping down to the two-person skiff. Its timbers were bleached with the wear of water and sunshine, and above the waterline the wood was fuzzy to the touch. Blaze knocked near the top of the hull, and one of the beams actually rattled.
"What's holding it together? The power of prayer?"
"They take this thing out," Dante hissed, glancing at the river.
"I wouldn't trust it in a puddle."
"River looks okay," Blaze said, grabbing hold of the unraveling rope at its fore and following it to a stake a few feet up the bank.
"Get in."
"I'll spoils," he swore, then edged up through the water and rolled himself inside. It was decently broad and didn't threaten to show its belly at the addition of his weight, but he didn't like the way it rolled on the current. Blaze freed the rope and swung the boat upside long to the shore, then wiggled his rear like a cat before it makes a leap and hurled himself in behind Dante. The boat flapped around like a man who's just stubbed his toe, and Dante threw himself flat against its bottom.
"You ass!"
"I'm no sailor," Blaze said. "Now I'm the captain here. Grab a damn oar."
"Are you sure you wouldn't rather finish drowning me?"
"I think I hear someone coming," Blaze said, cocking his ear and shoving them off.
"Where?" Dante whispered,
ducking down and taking up an oar. He dipped it smoothly into the water.
"Well, that got you rowing."
He smiled at himself and picked up the other oar. Dante glared at him over his shoulder, then pressed his fingers to his temples.
"Row on the other side, you idiot."
"I said I'm not a sailor," Blaze spat back. "Doesn't sound really carry on the water."
"One reason among many you should shut the hell up,"
Blaze muttered to himself. They pointed the nose downstream and paddled out into the current. From 40 or 50 feet off, the bank rushed by like they were running on the water. The blade of Dante's oar spun whirlpools and clouds of bubbles into the light chop of the grey waters. Each time he lifted it clear, a stream of water spattered away from the oar. Blacks and blues shimmered beneath the silvery surface, a hint at the vastness of its depths.
"Whose idea was this?" Blaze asked. In 5 minutes of travel, the hut was already little more than a dark blot upstream.
"Further than the opposite shore."
"It was a good one."
"You sound surprised," Dante said. He let his paddle skim the surface for a moment, arching his back to flex the kinks from his shoulders. He thought about calling to the nether, soothing his muscles, but let it be. Rowing wouldn't kill him. The breeze was very faint, buffering him around the ears with only the occasional gust, but back in the woods, the heads of the trees were swaying. Brown leaves tore loose and fluttered south, hanging nearly motionless with regards to the boat. For perhaps the first time in his life, Dante wished he knew more about mathematics. Waves beat gently on the sides of the boat in glorps and burbles. The two paddles swished rhythmically. The trees on the banks fell away, replaced by fields of black-brown dirt and old yellow wheat stalks shorn of their heads. Now and then, a house stood up alone in the farmland. After a while, Dante's knees cramped under him, and he squirmed into a cross-legged stance. When he grew hot, he shed his cloak. A few miles down, the Chancet bent to their left. Following its curve, they saw it widen further yet, and beyond the broad grey bulge of waters, no more than 3 miles away, 20 minutes, he figured, if they kept to their strokes, the welcome smoke and low-slung spires of what had to be Wetton. Dante looked back and laughed at Blaze.
"Let's pull up before we hit town," Blaze said. "It'll look weird paddling right up to the docks in this thing."
"I'm sure we could come up with something," Dante said. But a mile upstream, they angled it into shore on a sandy beach and disembarked into the shallows. He picked up the rope from inside the bow, as far as the rowboat could be said to have one, and carried it to shore.
"There's nowhere to tie it up."
"Who cares?"
"We should at least drag it aground," he said, holding the rope in both hands. "Maybe it'll treat someone else as well."
"Fine," Blaze said, and blew air past his lips. They grabbed hold of its slippery sides and leaned forward, pulling it up on the sand until it was clear of the waves lapping up the beach.
"Good enough, master?"
"It'll have to do," Dante said, looking away.
"Well, forward ho."
Blaze took the lead. The land north of the city had been cleared for farms and firewood, coverless, so they took to the road. The hard, rutted dirt felt odd beneath Dante's boots. It had been weeks and many miles since he'd walked on anything but forest floors and the beds of creeks. He looked down on himself, at the mud stuck to the bottom of his cloak, the knots in his bootlaces where they'd snapped and been retied, the grime coating his hands, the black crescents of his fingernails. He looked filthy, even by city standards. He realized, with a small shock that made him feel old, he wanted a bath. The north wind kept Wetton's stink of smoke and sewage and tanneries and manure and sweat from their noses until they were within a bowshot of its gates. It hit them all at once, and they looked at each other, nose wrinkled, then laughed quietly.
"Haven't missed that," Blaze said.
"We're probably no better," Dante said, nudging his nose against his shoulder. He was right.
"At least we came by it honest."
The boy stopped before the gates and put his hand on his sword. "Wetton's a free city," Dante said, then frowned. "I think." Blaze glanced among the modest traffic passing through the crossroads behind the gate. Men and women on foot, a lot of ox and mule teams bearing wagons filled with the harvest of corn and wheat and potatoes and beans. A good number were armed. Not all, not even a majority, but in a minute's watching they saw more men, and a couple of women, with swords at their belt, than anywhere in Bressel but the arms yards and the barracks of the town watch.
"I'm thinking it's okay," Blaze said.
"I suppose we could just act natural."
"I don't know about that. For you, natural seems to involve getting wrapped up in death cults and murderous intrigue."
"They're not a death cult," Dante said, falling in behind. Among other minor miracles, he'd learned to walk without knocking his sheath against his knee, and he allowed himself a small swagger as they rejoined civilization. The shadow of the gate swallowed them up and spat them back into the sunshine of the interior crossroads. A few blocks passed without purpose, lost in the vision of houses of timber and stone, the pillowy white smoke of smithies, the simple presence of other people. Dante found himself watching every man who walked their way. Sometimes, sensing his gaze, their faces darkened with the half-felt emotion of troubled dreams. Sometimes he thought he saw fear. The shadows grew long and longer yet. Size-wise, Wetton was no contest to Bressel, but it was large enough to hide them if they wished, and it soon became clear it was far too big for them to keep watch on every road. "We should get the nearest inn to that north gate,"
Dante said, stopping at an intersection. He stepped back from an oncoming carriage. Horse sweat ruffled his nostrils, and he tasted bile.
I was thinking about that. They might cut through the forest. We should hire a beggar to watch the western gate, too.
Make it a kid, Dante said. That way we can threaten to beat him up.
The docks, then? That's where the scum always floats up.
Dante nodded, deciding not to remind Blaze where he'd first found him. They made a left for the river and descended into the noise and clutter of trade, the stink of old fish and things rotting in water, the tall blank walls of warehouses. Down near the docks, swarms of mudders and the kind of boy who's always bumping over bread stands tore through the streets like skinny, reeking flies. None of them looked older than 10. One such group shrieked past, and Blaze hauled one in by the collar.
What's your name, kid?
Whatever you want it to be,
the boy said, eyes held fast on their belted swords. He looked about 7, but his clothes flapped loose around his body, and his arms were straight and thin, knobby at the elbows and hands.
Smart, Blaze said. We've got a job for you. Come on.
Can't I stay here?
The boy's round eyes stood out from his cinder-smudged face.
There's money in it, Dante said, bouncing a chuck off his chest.
The kid seemed to rematerialize at ground level to snatch it up, then stood and stared up at them, head cocked.
George, he said, what's yours?
We need you to watch the West Gate, Blaze said.
Don't the guards do that?
The guards would want more money, Blaze said, smiling tightly. Come with us, or cough it up.
Let me go get Barnes, George said. That way he can watch if I fall asleep.
He darted away before they could object. They hustled behind, tight on the heels of their investment.
He'll betray us in a second, Dante said. We'll promise him more if he doesn't, and a thrashing if he does.
You'd make a good magistrate, Dante snorted. George pried another dirty-haired youth from the crowd around an impromptu wrestling match, and they padded back to the older two.
He's my brother, George said.
We need you to watch the West Gate, Dante said, bending down to put his face level with theirs.
We're looking for 2 riders. They look like... He stopped. They'd never seen the men, other than the one they'd killed by the river. Doubtlessly, pairs of riders filtered into the city 40 an hour.
What do they look like, Blaze?
How the hell should I know? One sounded nasty, and one sounded like a princess.
One's going to look weak, and the other will look strong, Dante said.
He rubbed his face. How could he have made an oversight like that? How had they planned to ambush them when they had no idea what they looked like?
The weak one should look like a priest, wearing a robe or something.
Blaze scratched his neck.
At least the nasty one will have a sword. And they'll be on horseback,
Dante added lamely. Only 2 of them.
Okay,
George said. What do we do when we see them?
What's the closest inn to the North Gate? Dante said.
The Foaming Keg,
Barnes put in. He was a few inches shorter than his brother, bore the same moppish dark brown hair, 1 or 2 younger.
It's the one with the picture of the foamy keg over the door.
Right, Dante said, squeezing his eyes shut. If you see them, one of you comes and tells us right away. The other one follows them and sees where they go. Another chucks in it for you if you do.
And they're fished if you run off,
Blaze put in, shaking his under their noses.
Ask the innkeep for Dante.
Or Blaze.
Okay, George said. When do we start?
Now,
Blaze said. The brothers looked at each other and trotted off toward the west. They weren't wearing shoes.
That may have been very stupid.
They made haste for the Foaming Keg and spent 10 minutes arguing with the keeper about the vacancy of windowed rooms on the 2nd or 3rd story facing the North Gate. Back in Bressel,
Dante would have given in at the keeper's first sob story or breakdown of expenses, but after the last few weeks, facing limited silver and an uncertain future, he accepted no terms until he was paying only half again what he thought fair. Both parties left angry, which struck him as the mark of true sophistication in the intercourse of society. Blaze installed himself in the window to watch the streets. His tanned face grew murky in the twilight. Dante lit a candle and holed up in the corner, spreading the cycle over his knees.
"There's a couple of riders," Blaze said, leaning forward.
"No, wait, that one's a woman.
A woman riding outside a carriage? What kind of town is this?"
"Couldn't say. There's a couple.
But that guy looks like he's a billion years old. He looks like he died about 5 miles back."
Blaze laughed and clapped his knee. Dante scowled at his pages.
"And those two look like they've bathed in the last month. Can't be them."
A couple minutes dragged by.
"Oh, there's a—"
"Enough," Dante said.
"Hey, at least I'm doing something here."
"Do it quietly."
"There's a couple,"
he stage whispered, then laughed at Dante's glare.
"All right, fine, read your damn book."
"I will."
"Good."
"It is good," Dante said, and found he'd lost his place. The skies grew dark. With fading frequency, Blaze would crane his face out the window to meet the clatter of hooves. Dante lost himself in the book, flipping between sections to make certain he was matching names to lineage and king to kingdom. A knock banged against the door and he bit his tongue. Blaze pointed at them, mouthed,
"You."
He lowered himself from the sill and stepped to the side of the thin door. Noiselessly, he drew his blade.
Who is it?"
Dante called, giving Blaze the eye.
"Barnes, sir,"
a small voice said from the other side. Blaze let out his breath, and Dante unbarred the door.
"Did you see them?"
"George says to say we saw the two people you wanted us to see," Barnes said.
"Where's George now?" Dante asked.
"Following them."
"Where'd they go?"
Blaze said.
"I don't know,"
Barnes shrugged. Dante looked at Blaze over Barnes's greasy head.
"Shit."
"It's okay," Blaze said, eyes darting.
We should have at least a couple hours until they'd go to sleep. Barnes, do you think you can find George before midnight?"
"Yeah, he's my brother."
"Then go find him. You two keep following until they go inside an inn. Then George stays there while you come back here. You got that?"
"I think,"
Barnes said, twisting his hips and swinging his arms.
"What did I say?"
"You said go find George. Then when they go to sleep, come tell you."
"That is what I said,"
Blaze said, giving Dante an impressed look.
"Well, go do it, dammit."
The boy disappeared without a word. Dante stared through the open doorway, wondering how many of them died before they reached his own age. His older brother had been among them, sending Barnes and his brother to spy on killers for a chuck apiece. But they were willing to take it. To them it must feel like the wealth of dragons. He rebarred the door and yawned. The dawn in the woods felt like ages ago. He slumped back in the corner, massaging the back of his head. The rears of his eyes felt like someone were pressing against them with a thumb.
"I'm going to nap," he told Blaze.
"Switch you in a couple hours."
He settled down on the pallet, wrapping up in his cloak. Sometime later, a knock stirred him from sleep and he drew a deep breath. There was the tick of a lock, a muted conversation, but in his half-sleep, he couldn't make out a word.
"Get up, Tommy," Blaze said. "Barnes is back."
Dante sat up straight. His brain felt like it had been left in the thoroughfare for a season. He blinked at Blaze's wiry height, at the squirming Barnes who didn't rise past his ribcage.
"Hello,"
Dante said, scratchy.
"Hi,"
Barnes waved.
"The two men went to their room a while ago."
"How'd you find George?"
I asked the other boys if they'd seen him until one of them said yes.
Oh. Dante got up. He emptied his pack of everything but the book and a knife and re-looped his sword belt around his waist. He had no idea what time it was. He felt worse than when he'd gone to sleep.
What's everybody standing around for?
Lead on,
Blaze said, shoving Barnes lightly between the shoulders. They tramped down the streets. The night was cold. Wind channeled down the empty streets. Overhead, the stars watched with blank eyes. For 10 minutes, Barnes led them through an impossible tangle of alleys, stopping briefly to greet other small boys who looked up at Dante and his sword with round and gleaming eyes. Barnes stopped in the mouth of a side street and pointed across an avenue to a wooden building with a painting of a frog's head above the door.
"They're the third room on the second story," said a voice behind them. They whirled, swords out, and saw George.
"Don't hurt me!"
"Sorry," Dante said. "Get up already." "Do we get our other chuck now?" George said, scooting toward them, ignoring the fresh dust on his breeches.
"How long ago did they go to their room?" Blaze said.
"A while," George said. "First they had some drinks. I got thrown out, but I sneaked back in."
Dante handed him a blackened piece of silver.
"Go buy yourself some bread."
"Don't tell me what to do,"
George said. He jogged into the depths of the alley. Barnes waved at them and ran to catch up to his brother.
"Did you hear what he said to me?"
"You'll get over it," Blaze said.
He put away his sword. "Sounds like they're drunk. Couldn't ask for more."
"You ready?"
"Are you?"
"It's the only way to get them off our backs," Dante said.
The common room was stifling, rank with smoke and the sweat of men and the vinegary odor of vomited wine. The innkeeper glanced up and they kept their eyes front and beelined for the stairs. At the second floor, Blaze brought out his blade and Dante followed suit. Blaze counted off the doors, pointed to the third. Dante nodded. Blaze squared himself in front of it, paced back. He waited till loud laughter pealed up from the first floor, then barreled forward, leveling a shoulder against the wood. It splintered to chunks, and he hurled right through into the darkness. Dante yelped and leaped over the wreckage of the door, whacking at the first figure that wasn't Blaze, who was busy extricating his sword from the chest of the same man Dante'd just stabbed. The dying man gurgled, and a candle flared from the far end of the room. They paused, wrists flexing, when the dying man slumped forward on their blades.
"Dante Galland," the remaining man said, and they heard the high, reedy voice from the stream 2 mornings before.
He had a long, pale face, black hair queued at the base of his neck and falling past his shoulders. He was wearing nothing but a dirty grey set of underclothes which sagged at the ass and elbows.
"Some son of a bitch, you won't leave us alone,"
Blaze said back at him, twisting his sword in the other man's body and hauling it free. Blood sprayed over his hand, and the corpse dropped onto Dante's feet, pulling his sword from his grasp. The man splayed his fingers at them, and Dante saw the air go dark. By instinct he punched back, and a black gout rippled like flame from his hand. The two forces met and became nothing. The man curled his lip, gestured with index and middle fingers. Dante felt the nether enfolding him like a cloak. He swung his arm from the elbow as if to say, "Behold!" and again negated the man's power.
"Stop that," the man said. "Burn in hell,"
Blaze shot, chopping the air and spraying the man with blood. He stepped forward.
"Don't move," Dante warned.
"They didn't tell me you shared the talent,"
the black-haired man said, fists held out from his sides. A temporary stillness stood between them.
"What did they tell you?"
"You'd stolen the cycle."
He smiled with half his mouth.
"I can see that much is true."
"Can you?"
"It's cleared your mind,"
the man said, eyes and voice pinched with suspicion.
"Opened the paths to the nether."
"I see," Dante lied.
"Indeed."
The man nodded,
glancing between Dante and Blaze's blood-slick sword.
This may change things.
How's that? Blaze said.
They may welcome another into the fold, that's how.
Blaze laughed. The only fold's going to be the one I cleave into your forehead.
Then it's a good thing it's not your decision to make, because I'd crush you like a bean.
You've been trying to kill me for weeks, Dante said.
That was then, the man said, drawing back his shoulders. What you need now is proper training.
I've stopped you well enough without it.
If kicking down a door should impress me, then I'm impressed, the man said,
brushing the shoulder of his underwear.
But I'm not much, really. Nothing compared to the ones who'd teach you, or the ones who'd come after you if you deny me.
Dante said nothing. To accept would be to part with Blaze. He knew there were parts of the book that would take years to untangle, that its pages held knowledge he'd never learn in isolated scholarship. The powers he saw when he slept. He didn't even know how it had caused him to come in tune with the Nether in the first place. He did know he didn't like this man, and didn't trust the sect he represented. They may not be the amoral, bloodthirsty force the histories tried to paint them as, but Dante suspected a force as primal as the Nether couldn't be tapped without a certain recklessness of spirit that must taint their entire order.
Who are these others?
The Holy of Aron,
the man replied, as if he'd asked which direction the sun rose.
And what is it they want?
Open worship of our Lord, an equal place among the houses of the Belt.
Their temples are smashed, Dante said. Their people are slain.
The gods can't be killed, and neither can the ones who'd praise them. As for temples, we have ours within Menox, with Carverhals. Even the houses of Gashan count priests of a deeper alliance.
Dante drew back his chin.
What?
You've been seeding them with your own people? The man snorted.
Am I supposed to think it's dishonorable?
What's the honor in getting slaughtered in the open field? What's the glory in a fourth scar when you're the one getting scoured?
I don't understand, Dante said, trying to remember all the men of cloth he'd met in the temples and cloisters and cathedrals of Bressel. How many of them served a second god in secret, the very one whose knowledge Dante had been seeking?
How long has this been going on?
That's enough.
The man held up his hand, palm out. From the corner of his eye, Dante saw Blaze's arm tense up.
Come with me back to Bressel, and we'll sail to Narashtovik. There you'll learn whatever you want, things you don't yet even know to ask about.
Agreement ached in Dante's chest so hard he'd almost said yes before he could think. He glanced at Blaze and the blood sliding down the boy's sword. Say Dante left now with this man for Bressel, for this Narashtovik. Say Dante had 30 or 50 years left to his life. 3 to 5 decades to spend forging a name so bright he'd rival the stars, and every day of which he'd spend regretting the moment he'd left Blaze to whatever mean fate awaited him.
I won't be bound to anybody, Dante said,
knowing there would be other ways.
Not even the gods.
I thought the same thing when I was your age, the man chuckled. Have faith in those above, and some day you'll be the one looking down.
I'm not much for waiting, Dante said,
and then he flung out his hand and sent the opposite edge of the shadows that would heal. The man jerked his hands up to his chest, but before he could speak, his stomach spilled open like a sword had torn across it. His hands plunged to catch the intestines that slithered to the floor. Blaze screamed. The man hunched, clutching at his belly, gaping at Dante. The man raised shaking fingers thick with the blackish blood of the body. Dante reached for more shadows to meet the man's summons and found only a flicker. Blaze's arm blurred, and his sword spun across the room, pinning through the man's neck. The black-haired man made a choked gasp, tongue jutting from his mouth.
He rolled his eyes as if exasperated it had come to this, killed in his underwear in a foreign town by two dirt-caked boys. Then he went limp, hanging from the sword embedded in the wall.
"What in the name of whoever you hold holy was that?" Blaze said, planting his foot against the wall and clearing his sword.
The body thumped. He wiped it clean and sheathed it.
"I healed him," Dante said.
"No, you didn't."
"I mean, I did it backwards."
Dante lowered himself and groped for his own sword beneath the body of the first man they'd killed. He touched the warm stick of blood and drew back.
"I didn't know it would do that."
"I don't think he did either."
Blaze kicked the corpse, then shuddered so hard he fumbled his sword. He turned to Dante, face white and misted up with sweat.
"Did you mean what you said? About not being bound to anyone?"
"I'll find my own way. I don't need them or anyone else to find what I'm searching for." Blaze nodded and looked away, his face soured.
"This place stinks like a slaughterhouse."
They left down the stairs. For whatever racket their disturbance may have raised, there was no sign the drunk keepers and drunker patrons of the common room had heard a thing. The two of them took to the streets, hunting their way back in the bath of the moon, till their eyes found the painting of the foaming keg. Dante pushed down his nausea. His shoulders felt as broad as a bear's. There was no power in the world that could stop him and Blaze, he thought. They'd bend the world to its knee.
Chapter 5.
"They arrested your friend."
Dante spun for the high-pitched, sexless source of that news. He backed in a circle, then saw the dark head of one of the two brothers. Now that they weren't standing next to each other, he couldn't tell which was which.
"Arrested.
For what? How do you know?"
"I saw them go in after you left,"
the kid said.
"There were a whole lot of watchmen. They carried him out on their shoulders."
He tipped his head till his ear touched his shoulder.
"He said lots of nasty words."
Dante grabbed the boy by the collar and hauled him into the alley he'd just come out of. If they'd been after Blaze, they'd be after him. It was only blind chance the kid had found him on his way back from the market before he'd returned to the keg.
"Where are they keeping him?" "They keep them all at the Old Bailey. They have the trial on the Saturday, and then if they're guilty, they hang them the next Saturday."
"How do we tell who's guilty?"
"I don't know,"
the boy said, sweeping the dirt with his toe.
"I guess they all are, 'cause they're all at the hanging."
"Go see what you can see, kid. I'll reward you beyond your dreams."
"I can count to 100,
he said, then spun off down the streets. Dante rested his hand on his sword, glancing down both ends of the alley. He double, then triple-checked his pack to make sure the book was still there. Anything at the keg was lost. Going back would mean arrest. His prayer books, his histories, his candles and his notes and spare paper, all that was replaceable. It hurt to leave it, but he had no choice. His first instinct was to skip town. His second was to hunker down in the woods until the Saturday after and make a one-man assault on the city when they brought Blaze down to the gallows. He saw several flaws in his plan, however, not least of which was he'd have no chance of surviving, and Blaze would be killed anyway. The gesture would be nice, noble even, and even if there were a bard in the crowd, Dante would have a song written about him everyone could sing and forget in a season or two, but that would make him no less dead. Except possibly in a metaphorical way, that would do nothing to stop the worms from eating his skin. He picked up a shard of cobble and hurled it against the alley wall. He took a breath and looked around again. What did he have? Time, in some small measure. He had time. He should juice that for all it's worth before getting sucked into anything rash. The trial was 2 days off, the hanging a week from then. The first order of business was to find a place to hide, so he couldn't be caught before he had a chance to try anything tremendously stupid. He drew his cowl over his head. Rule out the docks. The boys were too easily bought if any of the watch were canny enough to throw a little coin their way. Plenty of other inns in town, but inns attracted traffic, and traffic attracted do-gooders and bounty vultures. Even if he holed up in his room, coming and going by cover of darkness, someone would see him. He needed isolation. The kind of place no one went without being dragged. An abandoned building could work if he could trust himself to differentiate between the truly abandoned and the merely decrepit. But that could be little better than an inn. Abandoned buildings attracted vagabonds, and vagabonds attracted lawmen. The basement beneath a slaughterhouse would be avoided by anyone with a working nose, but he'd have to do an awful lot of sneaking to avoid the labourers. And anyway, it was a place of trade. A churchyard, maybe. No one went to graves except on the anniversaries of the faithful departed, but he'd feel too foolish skulking around the tombstones. Leaving for the woods would cut him off from the clockwork of the city. He had to stay close. If, for some reason, the courts changed their schedule, Blaze could be killed before Dante heard one word. The graveyard, then, he set his mouth. At least his shame would be private. Dante fake-limped through the foot traffic, coughing wetly like a man on his way out, and enthusiastic about sharing his imbalanced humours. The first man he stopped drew his sleeve over his mouth and waved Dante to the south. Not knowing local landmarks are much other than what Bressel had taught him of how cities worked, he kept to the main streets, trusting his hood and his cough to deflect wandering eyes. Twice he crossed paths with officious men in cleanish brown uniforms. They walked without hurry, sweeping the crowds. Dante sealed up and strolled past them. If they had his description, he'd either run, fight, or die. Finding the churchyard wasn't hard. He just kept heading south until he saw a steeple surrounded by green lawns and gnarled old trees. Its lower stretch was coated in simple wooden poles, flat stones, fieldstone piles, and the dick-like obelisks of Sim, Leah's wayward husband who made sure to come back her way every spring. Just as often, there were no markers at all, just scruffy grasses on an ankle-high mound. The yard was big, and quiet, and empty. The shouts and hooves of the city faded behind him, blending into birdsong and the rustle of wind. He made for the towering markers and mausoleums that clustered at the crest of the short hill, a ways inside the yard. The first mausoleum door he tried didn't budge. The second swung with the sound of grating stone, but before he'd taken two steps inside, he was floored by the meaty stink of the recently deceased. He backed out, tenting the collar of his cloak over his nose. The fifth vault he tried opened reluctantly, and he eased inside, breathing through his mouth. All he smelled was dust and things turning into dust. Old flowers rested on the shelves with the urns of the cremated, but they were grey things, and when he touched them, they crumbled away, paffing against the stone floor. With the door propped part open, there was enough light to read by, if he squinted. He sat down on a cool stone shelf at the back of the room. He could bribe the Bailey guards, maybe. He didn't have much, but the collected purses of all the men they'd put down between Bressel and here would make a decent temptation to spring a nobody like Blaze. Just as likely they'd see right through him and lock him up and take the money. He could use George and Barnes as a go-between, but that was no better. They'd be beaten or killed if they showed up with that much silver, and them showing up at all after he'd handed them that much coin was no sure thing. He could try getting Blaze a note. Notes were simple enough, and maybe Blaze could tell him something that would help Dante break him out. But Blaze couldn't read.
Dante covered his eyes with one hand. He'd relished his solitude not a month ago. Now it felt empty, powerless as a childless old woman. Blaze had been arrested for the crime of being caught keeping himself alive. Those were the facts, but Dante had the sense the arrest itself would be proof enough of his guilt. He grabbed a vase and hurled it across the vault. The lacquered pottery exploded, shards tinkling on the stone. Ashes billowed low on the floor like a fog. Where had the law been when they'd been hunted like foxes? The watch had only shown their fat faces after the blood had been spilled, the blades put away. Blaze had been sleeping when he'd left. No doubt they'd crept up on him that way, catching him in his bed. They wouldn't have the decency to meet him with a sword in his hand. Whatever his fate, Dante resolved to slit as many of their throats as he could reach before it was over. He spent the daylight with the cycle, groping for answers that would bring him the strength to find a solution. Jack Hand kept showing up. Jack Hand's kingdom grew to hold the two rivers at its north and the Golden Forge at its south. He married the Maiden of the West and saw the sun rise over two hatches of cicadas. But, as with all growths, it began to take forms he could neither guess nor control. He whiled the days in the Tower of Venge and brooded on the new powers he could feel stirring within the lands. Shadows played in the hands of men he'd never met, men who owed him no homage. In the time-honored right of a king to own the hearts and minds of those who live by his grace in his lands, he dispersed the army of rats to train their eyeless sockets on the men who practiced in secret. He called his advisers to the tower, trading tactics over maps and oaths over ale. At the end of 7 days, he knew the names of the 54 conspirators and the homes of their families. Wise to the way, untreated roots will bear poison fruit, even when their trunk and its branches are hacked and burnt. He dispatched his blue cloaks to reach every manor within an hour's span, and in that way he cut short that threat in a single long-armed stroke. The wails of the doomed had no time to reach the ears of the next in line, and they perished before they could take to the road and plant the seeds of retribution. He'd meant to send a signal of fire that night to all who watched, but when he gazed from his tower at the fresh green folds of land and the fine white houses of the dead, he puzzled on the balance of destruction and creation. Instead of burning the houses of the traitors, he washed them clean of treachery and bequeathed them to the priests of his patron. And they sang the miracle of the man who turned the crippling poison into the strength of blood. He napped through the twilight and first hours of night, and then cut out for the docks. Boys shrieked and punched and threw dice. He lingered in the shelter of doorways, wasting half an hour before he spotted the kid who'd told him of Blaze's arrest. "Hey, Barnes."
"I'm George," the boy said, separating from his group.
"Did you find anything?"
"No," George said, waggling his head. "They won't let me into the bailey."
Dante swore. "Does it have windows?"
"Why would a bailey have windows?"
"There has to be some way in." George shook his head more.
"Vance tried to go in when he wasn't supposed to last year, and we never saw him since."
"You're smarter than him, aren't you?" Dante said. The boy shrugged, and anger flashed through his veins. "I'm beginning to doubt your value."
"You smell,"
George said, and before Dante could strike him, he'd retreated to a pack of 8 or 10 other boys. Dante took a step toward them, and their eyes glittered like animals beyond the light of a fire. They moved forward as one, faces and hands tight. He spat in the dirt and turned away. Once he left their sight, he ran and didn't stop until he reached the churchyard. He called out for the nether, released it, called again, convincing himself it was his to command. The next day gave him
nothing. He read through the morning, leaving long enough to buy some bread and salted meat and ask the grocer where and what time they held the trials, then returned to his tomb and read and ate and slept. Like that, the hours were gone. He woke that Saturday, and it was some time before he remembered enough to be afraid. He didn't intend to do anything more than go down to the trial and see what turned out, but even that modest plan shook him like a boy shakes a lightning bug in a bottle. He ate a bite of bread, chewing long after it was soft enough to swallow, then put the rest away. He'd puke if he tried any more. For a while he walked among the tombstones, reading names, feeling his boots in the grass, and the dirt between him and the bodies of the forgotten. The stones bore names and titles and families, lands and holdings and glories, cracks and crooked bases, and vandalism. A bent-backed figure trudged slowly through the flat part of the yard, a couple hundred feet from the hill. Dante crouched behind a tombstone and waited for the man to go away. He reminded himself he was just going to observe, to see if maybe they'd just give Blaze the lash and then the two could be back on their way. He scooped up dirt and rubbed it on his cheeks and neck, mussed his black hair, combing it through his fingers to stretch it over his ears and down his forehead. Let them recognize him through that. The crowds weren't too bad. A few hundred people had found the time to loiter around the square to laugh and jeer the accused. Others formed a lopsided ring around a red belt of flagstones kept clear by a passel of watchmen in rich brown cloaks. The red stones were divided into 12 sections and looped around an inner circle of white stone. At its center, a magistrate held court on a raised dais. Before him, attending his words with dirt-streaked faces, three men dressed in rags and chains awaited sentence. Dante's heart shuddered. Had he missed Blaze's hearing? He threaded among the crowd, trading elbows and shoulders. The magistrate murmured something, and the mob ruffled with laughter. Dante got about 4 people deep from the belt of red stones, and found he could go no further. He stood on his toes, scanning the faces of the accused, and after several long moments he found Blaze. The boy's cheeks looked puffy. A number of lumps and cuts stood redly on his nose and chin, but his eyes were hard and bright. The three men were dragged off for various beatings and imprisonments, and the next man in line was brought to stand before the court and be accused of attacking a tailor. For the next 2 minutes, the magistrate heard arguments of witness and defendant. The crowd cheered his sentence. "See you next Saturday," some wag called as he was hauled off. The bailiff stepped up beside the magistrate and thinned his eyes at his parchment. "Next to stand before this court, Blaze Buckler," he said. The people exchanged glances, laughing as the name circulated through the crowd. Dante clamped his jaw together as Blaze waddled into the open circle, chains clanking. "Blaze Buckler," the magistrate said, and bulged his lower lip with his tongue. He had a fine, delicate-boned face, and he stroked the saggy skin of his neck while he considered Blaze. "The charges against you are of 2 murders in a public house. What say you of your guilt?" "Not," Blaze said. "Very well. Witness." A man stepped forward, and Dante recognized the innkeep they'd seen in the common room of the Frog's Head. He was a fat man, the kind of man who spent more time in his own kitchen than fetching drinks.
"That would be me, sir."
"What did you see that night?" the magistrate said, leaning forward.
"I saw the 2 boys come in," he said,
looking around the craned faces of the crowd.
"They looked like rough boys. I've seen too many like them to be fooled by youth."
"To the point?"
"Right. They went upstairs. After a bit we heard some crashing around like the end of the world, and a bit after that they walked down cool as the nor' wind. I go upstairs and see the 2 slain. They had their guts hanging out like does."
"Sickening,"
Yes, sir. I'd never seen human intestines before. We're sort of pinkish-grey, with these funny blue bands around them. Ghastly. Indeed, the magistrate said, pursing his lips. As concerns your earlier statement, is that to say you didn't actually see the murders take place? Well, I wasn't about to go upstairs, the innkeeper said. It sounded like people were being killed up there.
The crowd groused with laughter. The magistrate quirked his mouth and beckoned Blaze forward.
What do you have to say in your defense?
They were tracking me and Dante for days, Blaze said.
His voice lost its waver as he went along.
They're cultists. They tried to kill us before we turned the tables on them.
So you admit killing them,
the magistrate said, raising a grey brow. He met the eyes of the audience and they laughed.
It was them or us, Blaze said, standing straight in his chains.
So you say. Can anyone corroborate your story?
Co-what-await?
The magistrate steepled his hands.
Were there any other witnesses?
Well, Dante was there, he said. If he was here, he'd tell you the same thing.
Wouldn't he tell me anything to save his neck from rope burn?
Blaze cocked his head.
Is your majesty calling me a liar?
The magistrate lifted his eyes to the overcast sky and waited for the nattering of the crowd to die down. He chuckled once they were reasonably silent, scratching his upper lip.
I'm no king, he said, and I'd say your motivations cast some aspersions on your words.
What? Well, how do you know he's not lying?
Blaze said, pointing at the innkeeper.
Because he'd be hanged for it. He's run the Frog's Head for 2 decades, and his father before him. Do you have family here? Property? I'm a registered almsman of Bressel. Your papers, the magistrate said.
Blaze said something Dante couldn't catch. The bailiff approached him and fumbled through the pockets of Blaze's grimy doublet. From here and there, the men of the crowd started hissing. The blank-faced bailiff removed a greenish crust of bread from Blaze's shirt, then scowled and cast it away. In another pocket he found the papers and carried them to the magistrate.
"You're not of the Arms Guild," he said after a moment's examination. "Perhaps you gave them some trouble."
"They said I was too young," Blaze cried.
"A likely story."
"Look, you old crow! Those guys were trying to kill us. What else were we supposed to do?"
"Peace, peace," the magistrate said, raising his palms. "The court has other business today, and you're not the first nor the last to hold himself above the law. That's all this matter is, isn't it? Your defense, so far as it can be believed, is the law of the wilds. The laws of man are derived from the gods of the belt itself. We believe in justice on this earth and mercy in the heavens."
He parted his lips and gazed up at the clouds.
"You're to be executed 1 week hence."
"Well, eat shit!"
Blaze shouted. The bailiff punched him in the eye, and he dropped out of sight. Dante shoved the man in front of him out of his way, bouncing up and down to get a glimpse of Blaze before they wrangled him back to his cell. But the boy stumbled on his chains, pelted by hard bread and softer, less savory things, and was swallowed by the rabble. The next prisoner was brought forth, and the mob forgot about Blaze as the process began again. Dante turned and forced himself away from the white stone circle and its red band. He bumped someone, and they responded with a fist to his ribs. Dante's hand clutched at his sword. The man's life was saved by Dante's dim understanding. He would only have the chance for one big scene in this town, and this wasn't the time for it. He walked on. He walked back to the tomb. He walked in a fugue of scarred faces and screeching voices that echoed from the city walls like the whole thing was shaking apart. Nothing but a show, a dance, an act for the men of Wetton to pat themselves on the back and feel great about having sent a trumped-up monster to his grave.
The laws were as hollow as the black between the stars. He'd see them swing from their own nooses next Saturday. He felt grass beneath his feet and stopped to get his bearings.